Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Pesachim, daf Samech Tes. We're in Samech Tes, Amud Beis. And our first discussion today takes us to a stira, what seems to be a contradiction between our Mishnah and a Mishnah that we learned not that long ago in Erevin. First, let's go back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah brought down a basic machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. And truth be told, all the Tanayim, as far as Machshirei Karban Pesach. Meaning Karban Pesach itself, we know that even if the 14th day of Nisan falls out on a Shabbos, so the halacha is that you offer the Karban Pesach. Karban Pesach, I feel the Torah says B'Mo'ado. And it's appointed time. It's appointed time. It's the 14th day of Nisan. So therefore, even when it falls out on a Shabbos, it's going to override the Shabbos. So the Shechita is Karban Pesach. And all the avodas that are related to the Karban Pesach itself, that's clear that that is overriding the Shabbos. What about Machshirin? What about preparatory acts? So that was a debate in the Mishnah between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer, Lashita So, as I pointed out already before, he consistently says this throughout Shas, that Machshirin are mutter, that all the preparatory acts are mutter as well. So that means that according to Rabbi Eliezer, you can carry the animal to the Beis HaMikdash, you can... the other examples in the Mishnah is you can carry the animal to Beit HaMikdash, you can bring it from outside of Tchum, and if the animal has a wart, you can cut off the wart. So all those activities you're allowed to do on this Erev Pesach, and the Chachamim say no. The Chachamim say that those are things that you could have and should have done before Pesach. Not to be left for Shabbos. Now that it's Shabbos, you're not allowed to do any of those preparatory activities. Okay, so that's the basic machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. We're going to zoom in right now onto one of the things that Rabbi Eliezer says you're allowed to do, and that is you're allowed to cut off a yabelis. If you have a wart on the animal, so the Mishnah says, according to Rabbi Eliezer, you're allowed to cut it off. Urimenu, the Gemara notes that this seems to be problematic. We're on Tzana Ches Amud Beis. We're four lines from the top of the Amud, or Reminu, when the Gemara says, I'm going to ask the following question, Cholchin Yabelis B'Mikdash, V'lo B'Medina. You cut the Yabelis in the Beis HaMikdash, but not B'Medina. So in other words, the Mishnah Erevin, remember that 10th parak of Erevin that went over things you're allowed to do in the Beis HaMikdash, but not outside the Beis HaMikdash. And why? Primarily because in the Beis HaMikdash, they can overlook Yisuri Derabbanan, Ein Shvus B'Mikdash, so therefore you're allowed to violate something which is only in Yisuri Derabbanan. Outside the Beis HaMikdash, obviously, we have to subscribe to Yisuri Derabbanan, so we're not allowed to do it. So that's the Mishnah Erevin. One of the examples the Mishnah Erevin says is that Chotchin Yabelis B'Mikdash, you're allowed to cut off a ward in the Beis HaMikdash of Olah B'Medina, but not outside the Beis HaMikdash. V'im B'Kli Kam V'Kan Aser. And then the Mishnah goes on to say that if you do it with a knife, or a blade, so then it's going to be Aser. Meaning cutting it off with a blade, that's an Issur D'Oraisa. There's no discussion to be had. But cutting it off with your hands is a Shinui. It's different, and therefore it's only an Issur D'Rabbanan in the Beis HaMikdash. It can be done outside the Beis HaMikdash. It cannot be done. Okay. Now the problem is that we have our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that you can do so, but only according to Rabbi Eliezer you may do so, because he allows Machshirin. But our Mishnah says, but short of that, you're not allowed to do it. And that's according to our Mishnah. Meanwhile, the Mishnah Psachim says you are allowed to do it, and so therefore it only begs the question, what's the difference between our Mishnah that says that you're not allowed to do it, and the Mishnah Erevin says that you are allowed to do it. So the Gemara now is going to address this question. So the Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Chan Amar, Idi Biyad. So the Gemara says we can address in the following manner. Really, both Mishnahs are talking about the removal of the wart with your hand. So Habalach, Habi Yavesha. It depends on what kind of wart we're talking about. If it's a dry, crusty wart and it's only just dead skin, and all you're doing is just scraping off dead skin, that's fine. That's allowable. But if it's not dead appendage. In other words, it's an appendage to the body, but it has lecha in it, it has moistness in it. In other words, it's part of the animal. And removing it would be like removing part of the animal. And we know that you're not allowed to remove any part of the body. This is what we generally file under gozes, right? You're not allowed to shear the animal, and you're not allowed to remove anything off the animal as well, right? Fingernails, hair, anything off the body, any live appendage off the body cannot be removed. So the Mishnah that says that you're not allowed to do it, that's talking about balacha, that's talking about where it's moist. Good. That's one distinction between the Mishnah Erevin versus our Mishnah over here in Pesachim. Another approach would be that they're both talking about where the wart is a moist wart. And the difference is whether you do it with your hand or whether you do it with a kli. Okay, so we have now basically two different approaches in terms of how to resolve the two Mishnayos. The Mishnah Erevin says that you're allowed to do it. The Mishnah Pesachim says that you're not allowed to do it. I mean, again, short of Rabbi Eliezer who says you are, but Rabbi Eliezer allows Machshirin. So the how do we address the discrepancy between the two Mishnayos? So again, there are basically now going to be two ways to address the discrepancy. One is to say that our Mishnah that says that you're not talking about balacha, the Mishnah Erevin is talking about Biavesha, where it's dry, or they're both talking about balacha, but one's talking about with your hand and the other one's talking with a kli. Doing it with your hand, that's okay. That's an Issa Darabanan. And in the Beis HaMikdash, that's fine. Doing it with a kli, that's prohibited. Even the Beis HaMikdash, because that's an Issa Daraisa. Good. So we have now two approaches. Now the Gemara wants to contrast. Why did each approach reject the other approach? So first of all, why did one of the Amoraim reject the approach of Habalacha Habiyavesha? One Mishnah is talking about where it's moist, the other one's talking about where it's dry. So Amalacha Yavesha Mefrach Pirche. So he says, well, when it's dry, that's and all you're doing is just scraping off dead skin. That's nothing. Meaning don't even put that under the category of Isuri Durabanan. That's literally nothing. All you're doing is just scraping off dead skin. Take a look at Rashi. Mefrach Pirche Velo Kari Lechaticha. That's not even called cutting something off. And so therefore, it's not even in the discussion. Something that's in discussion is I'm cutting something off, but under certain circumstances, it's okay. This is nothing. Ulaman damer. So that's why he doesn't like that approach, because scraping dead skin is not even considered cutting off a wart. So it doesn't even fit into the discussion. Ulaman damer. Idivi dibi avlo kasha hablacha biyavesha my time alo amar. Idivi dibalacha avlo kasha habiyat habakli. And the other amora. How come he didn't like the distinction of one Mishnah is talking about cutting it off with your hand, and the other one's talking about cutting off with a kli? The Mishnah in Erevin is talking about cutting it off with your hand, which is fine, again, in the base of Mikdash, where it's the Nisr Darabanan, and they can overlook that. Our Mishnah that says that's prohibited is talking about cutting it off with a kli. So once again, what's the difference? So again, we know the difference. The kli is Nisr Daraisa, Biyad is Nisr Darabanan. So how come the other Amora rejected this approach? Amalacha kli, haktani asa, min bekli, kamekan asar. So he says, well, it's a wonderful distinction, but really almost unnecessary. Take a look at that Mishnah Erevin. The Mishnah Erevin says, if you do it with your hand, so it would be mutter, and if you do it with a kli, it would be aser. So it's hard to make a fine distinction between the two Mishnayos when that very Mishnah over there in Erevin actually says that if I cut it with a kli, it's going to be aser. So the Edach, and that the other Amor, what will he say? Ha-diktani kli. So, ha-diktani kli, ha-chabapulta de Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yeshua, aser lash me'inan. Yeah, you may be right, that Mishnah over there, but this Mishnah over here also addresses a machlokis between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Now remember, Rabbi Eliezer will tell you that you're allowed to, because Rabbi Eliezer allows machshirin. So it could very well be that the point in our Mishnah over here is that, yes, it's true that Rabbi Yeshua says that you're not allowed to cut it off with a kli, even though the Mishnah Erevin already says that straight out. But what our Mishnah contributes to the whole discussion is that Rabbi Eliezer would say that you're allowed to, even though it's an Issa Daraisa, and even though you're cutting it off with a kli, you're allowed to, because he allows machshirin to be done, even for Isuri Daraisa. Okay. So good, so Adkan, so that takes us now, we have a discrepancy between our Mishnah in Pesachim versus the Mishnah in Erevin, and the Gemara gave two basic approaches to try to make a distinction between the two Mishnahs. Okay. Now we go on in the Mishnah. Now, if you remember back in the Mishnah, our Mishnah had a lot of dialogue. There was a lot of give and take in the Mishnah. The two positions are very clear. Rabbi Eliezer says you're allowed to do machshirin, and the other Tanaim say you're not allowed to. But now, to be a little bit more specific, what was the arguments? What was the argument? What was the counter-argument? So let's take a look back in the Mishnah. I'm going all the way back to Samech Hamed Beis, and I'm just going to reread now some of the discussion, and the Gemara is going to comment on the back and forth of the Mishnah. I'm a Rav Elazar v'lo dinu. I'm just going back to the Mishnah. I'm rereading the Mishnah. Rav Elazar says it's logical. Ma im shchita shi mishum malacha dochus haShabbos elu shehein mishum shvus lo yitchos haShabbos. So Rabbi Eliezer says, look, shchita, that's an issur d'oraisa, and that you're allowed to do. These other examples, carrying an animal, walking from outside of tchum, those are issur d'rabbanan. So Rabbi Eliezer says, if I can violate issur d'rabbanan, d'oraisa, don't you think I can violate issur d'rabbanan? Amar le Rabbi Yoshua. So Rabbi Yoshua says the following in response. Yom Tov Yochiach. Well, let's take a look at it. Just a simple Yom Tov, meaning not paste. It could be any Yom Tov. Doesn't matter. Shetiru bo mishum malacha. Now, we know on Yom Tov you're allowed to do malacha. For example, you're allowed to cook on Yom Tov. Good. So you're allowed to violate malacha. Meanwhile, v'asur bo mishum shvus. Are you allowed to violate any Yisuri d'Rabbanan on Yom Tov? No. Even if it involves cooking. Even if it involves eating, it doesn't matter. Meaning Yom Tov, where eating is a mitzvah, cooking food for Yom Tov is a mitzvah, cooking food on Yom Tov is a mitzvah, but meanwhile, you can't violate any Yisuri d'Rabbanan. So Rabbi Yoshua's counter-argument to Rabbi Eliezer is, you're happy arguing this argument on Pesach, but meanwhile, you yourself will agree to me that on Yom Tov, although we can cook and light a fire and do various Yisuri d'Oraisa, you agree to me that you can't violate Yisur d'Rabbanan. So Amalei Rabbi Yoshua, sorry. So Amalei Rabbi Elazar, Mazeh Yoshua, Ma Raya, Rishus LeMitzvah. And the response of Rabbi Eliezer is, apples and oranges. Shechting and Karban Pesach, that's a mitzvah. Cooking on Yom Tov, that's a Rishus. That's just permission. Meaning that's a heter, but it's not a mitzvah. So now what the Gemara is going to do is zoom in on that little give and take between Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer and note that there's a very fundamental difference between Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer. And the Gemara now goes into this discussion. Am Rabbi Eliezer, Mayim Shchita v'chulei. Rabbi Yoshua l'tamid amr simchas yom tov nami mitzvah hi. So the Gemara says perfect. Perfect meaning that I understand the debate in the context of they are consistent. Rabbi Yoshua is consistent with his position. And Rabbi Eliezer is consistent with his position. Rabbi Yeshua is of the opinion that Simchas Yom Tov, enjoying Yom Tov, and by enjoyment we're talking about eating over here, it's a mitzvah. So cooking on Yom Tov for Yom Tov, also part of the mitzvah. Perfect. So I hear Rabbi Yeshua's argument, and as we're going to see in just a moment, what does Rabbi Eliezer say? You don't have to eat on Yom Tov. There's no mitzvah to eat on Yom Tov. There's no Simchas Yom Tov. You can enjoy Yom Tov, but you don't have to. Okay, so let's see this inside. Did Tanya Rabbi Eliezer Amein Loladim Yom Tov Elochav Veshoso Yoshev Veshone? Rabbi Eliezer says, here could be your plan for Yom Tov. You can go about it Yom Tov one of two ways. Either you can spend the entire day in the Beis Medrash, okay, doing nothing else other than learning, taking care of your spiritual needs, or you can spend the entire day eating. Okay, so it's either all physical or all spiritual. But in other words, it doesn't have to be a combination of both. And Rav Yeshua Omer Chalkeu, and Rav Yeshua says, no, divide it. Divide the day in half. Chetzio la'achila v'shia v'chetzio la'beis medrash. Half the day you're going to be eating and drinking, and half the day you're going to be in the Beis Medrash learning. Okay? V'am Rav Yochanan shnei mikra achadoshu. Now, on this machlokas, where is it coming from? What's generating this machlokas? So Rav Yochanan explains. It's based on what seems to be a discrepancy between two psukim. Kasev echad omer atzeros l'shem lokecha. V'kasev echad omer atzeros t'yelachem. So it's somewhat confusing what exactly is supposed to happen on Atzeres, on the day of rest. So one pasuk says, L'Hashem Lakecha, dedicated to God. Another pasuk says, Lachem, dedicated to you. So Rabbi Eliezer, Savar, Kula L'Hashem or Kula Lachem. So Rabbi Eliezer says, okay, now you have a choice. You can either do Kula L'Hashem or Kula Lachem. Yeah, in other words, you can just simply choose which option you want. And Rabbi Yeshua Savar Chalkei, Chatzil Hashem V'Chatzil Hashem. And Rabbi Yeshua says, no. Both Psukim are speaking to what we should be doing on Yom Tov. And how can we be Mekayim both Psukim? Well, that's easy. I'll just divide the day in half. Half the day will be Al Hashem and half the day will be Lachem. Now that we know this machlok between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, so now it's perfect. Now we understand. We go back to the Mishnah, and now we understand the machlok is back in the Mishnah. What was Rabbi Yeshua's argument? You can cook on Yom Tov, which is a mitzvah, because remember, according to Rabbi Yeshua, eating on Yom Tov is a mitzvah, chalkeu, divide Yom Tov, so half of the day of Yom Tov is dedicated to eating, so you have to eat on Yom Tov, it's a mitzvah to eat on Yom Tov, so cooking, therefore, is facilitating that mitzvah. And meanwhile, Rabbi Yeshua argues, you agree with me, you can't violate Yisuri de Rabbanan, So now go back to Pesach. So his argument was, we're going to say the same thing. Karban Pesach is a mitzvah, but you can't violate those Yisuri de Rabbanan. And what's Rabbi Eliezer's response? We hear it perfectly. Rabbi Eliezer says, you're coming at me with Yontif? You know my position regarding Yontif. It's not a mitzvah. There's no mitzvah to eat on Yontif. If you want to opt into the Kula Lachem, you can, but you don't have to. Yontif could be dedicated to Lashem. It could be totally Lashem. And therefore, you don't have to eat on Yontif. That Shitas Rabbi Eliezer. So now we understand the give and the take, the back and the forth between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara now continues on this discussion. As long as we're here talking about how we should treat our Yontif, we have a lot of Yontif coming up. It's good, good Gemaras, good Gemaras to prepare for Yontif.
There's a pasuk v'samachta bechagecha. What does Rabbi
Eliezer do? So v'samachta bechagecha could mean, could mean spiritual simcha, could mean wine. That's hard to argue, but okay, you're right. You're absolutely right. And also v'samachta bechagecha could mean carbon. But even when it's carbon, I don't really like that answer, because even when it's carbon, we eat the end up eating the carbon, you know. Okay, so it's carbon chagiga. Anyway, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Hakol Modim. So now this is Rabbi Elazar, not to be confused. This is Yamor Rabbi Elazar commenting on the Machlokas Tanaim of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. Hakol Modim, but starts to be Nanaim Elachem. Look, you get to Shavuos, so everyone agrees that it has to be a compromise of Chatzil Hashem and Chatzil Hachem. My Tami Yom Shenitna B'Torahu. So the Gemara gives an answer and says, you know why? Because it's the day that the Torah was given. So really, this Gemara begs an explanation, begs one, meaning that on any other Yontif of the year, Pesach, Sukkos, let's throw in Rosh Hashanah as well. Okay, I don't know if we can really call that a Yontif, but in other words, on any other Yontif of the year, so there, Rabbi Eliezer will tell you, you don't have to eat. You can go the Yontif without eating. And dedicate a Kula Hashem. But then when it comes to Shavuos, so the Gemara says, oh, I know he agrees over there that you have to eat. Why? Because the Torah was given. I mean, intuitively, if you asked me, I would have told you, what do you mean? Shavuos would be the day where it could be Kula Hashem, because that's the day the Torah was given. What day better to dedicate ourselves to Torah than on Shavuos? So it really begs the question, why on Shavuos is there a capitulation on the part of Rabbi Eliezer? Oh no, you have to eat on Shavuos. What? And the Gemara's answer is, well, it's the day that the Torah was given. It's a funny explanation. So if you take a look at Rashi, so Rashi says it's an attitude. If you take a look at Rashi inside, I read the Rashi. The first thing I'm going to do is find the Rashi. And then I'll read the Rashi. The Dibina Namilachem, it's right alongside where we are in the Gemara, just a little bit off from there. She yisbach mo b'machal mishto laharo shenoach mekubal yomzel Yisrael shenin and Torabo. We want to express our gratitude, meaning that the day the Torah was given is the day that we've now become obligated to the Torah. If we don't show joy on that day, so then basically that's a declaration, it's a proclamation that the Torah is onerous. So therefore, explains Rashi, we want to make sure that we eat to show everybody, no, this is a good thing. We're happy about it. So that's how Rashi explains the Gemara. Okay? I have a good feeling that there are other ways to explain the Gemara's answer over here and to understand why Shavuos it is that we have to eat on Shavuos. Okay. Well, another time. We'll come back to that. Try and remember correctly, there's a Beis Halevi on this. Anyway, but we go on. Amar Rabba Kol Modim B'Shabbos Debina Na Melechem. Shabbos, another day where we all agree, you have to eat on Shabbos. You cannot spend Shabbos just learning, you have to eat as well. My time of a karasla Shabbos Onig, because the Paskin Yeshayahu says that Shabbos is called an Onig. Onig means delight. Delight means eating. Amar Rav Yosef HaKol Modim B'Purim Debina Na Melechem. Purim also. It's interesting how Purim fits into this whole discussion. Meaning, Shavuos is a Yontif. Shabbos, it's not a Yontif, but it's a day of rest.
But Purim is like, is it totally rabbinic?
Right, correct. My point exactly. So it's interesting that Purim falls into this discussion, but it does. My time, you may miss a simcha ksiv bay, because you open up the Megillah and you read Megillah Esther, and it says regarding Purim, you may miss a simcha. It's a day of feasting. So in other words, Purim also, you cannot spend the day dedicated to learning. You got to dedicate some of Purim to eating. Marbury de Ravina kula shaisa aviyasa betanisa. Marbury de Ravina was a consistent faster, fasted all the time. Now the simple pshat of the Gemara is that he fasted all year long. Now even in the simple pshat of the Gemara, it's hard to imagine day and night. Not hard to imagine, that's impossible. So probably what the Gemara means is he fasted during the day, but not at night. Okay, so he just did, but he regularly did day fasts.
Was it in the Masechet? He fasted so much that when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai spoke, and which when the Romans had him treat him for
right,
the fast.
Correct.
He was like
Rabbi Tzadok.
Oh,
right. I got that from Stu. You know, I got I cheated. So the but right, the Gemara in Gittin.
Yeah.
Right.
So like,
correct.
The Romans like a.
So Shatav Yasa Betanisa, so he would be fasting all year long. Levar may I start to pour your mali yom adikipurim. 3 days he would eat. And those 3 days were Shavuos, Purim, and Erev Yom Kippur. Now it's interesting, by the way, what about Shabbos? Meaning where the Gemara just said a moment ago, you gotta eat on Shabbos. And it doesn't sound like from the Gemara that he ate on Shabbos. All right, I raise that as a question. I don't have an answer. But in the meantime, however, at Seres Yom Shenitna Batara, and he goes on to explain, Shavuos is the day the Torah was given. Purim Memishav Simcha Ksiv. And Purim, as we established, that's a day of eating and rejoicing. And Mala Yom Adikipur and Erev Yom Kippur, that is also coming upon us. D'nichia bar Rav Midifti. The Gemara quotes, V'ini Zemesnaf Shech Sechem B'tishal Chodesh. And you will afflict yourself on the ninth of the month. Now we all know that's not the calendaric date of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the 10th of the month. What does the pasuk mean when it says, and you're going to be fasting on the 9th? V'chi b'tisha mit'anen? Yeah, we fast on the 9th. V'alo b'asir mit'anen? But it's not true, we fast on the 10th. Elo melecha kol ocha v'shosa b'tisha bo mala alav akastav ki'ilu mit'ane chi v'esiri. You eat on Erev Yom Kippur, ki'ilu, it's as if you fasted on the 9th and on the 10th. A number of ways of explaining the Gemara over here. We're just going to leave it kipshuto, that there's some inyan, there's some idea, that there's not, it's not that you're just eating on Erev Yom Kippur because you know you're fasting, but there's some positive commandment to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. That's the Pashas of our Gemara. And so therefore, another day where, even though the practice of Marbury de Ravina is to consistently fast year-round, but nevertheless, Erev Yom Kippur, because it's a positive commandment to eat, so he ate specifically on that day as well. Rav Yosef b'yom adat sarta, amar avdili eglatilsa. Rav Yosef, when it came time for Shavuos, so he made a declaration and he said to his attendants, his servants, I want veal, right? Yantav Shavuos, I want veal, right? Certain meals in our house have become like staple foods for certain yantavs. Okay, so for him, eglatilsa. So he had veal on Shavuos. Now Amar, and by the way, Iglatilsa literally means the third calf. And Rashi explains, usually does this, where Rashi gives a couple of explanations of what that means. One explanation, the one that Rashi here gives in Ardaf, is that it's Shlishi Labetan, meaning it's the third born. And some way, in a way that I do not understand and nor can explain, is that the third born is the best of the calves. Either way, the point of the Gemara is that he wanted the best piece of veal for Shavuos. Shavuos to him was an exciting yantav. Why? Amar yilo hayuma de kagarim kami Yosef ika b'shuka. Because he said, look, had it not been for today, meaning Shavuos man Torah, I'd be another Joe in the street. And I mean that literally. His name is Yosef. And I'd just be a simple Joe. But now that I have the Torah, and now that I become a Talmud Chacham, it provides for me something special and unique, and it makes me it gives meaning and significance to my life.
Great support. What you should each place on.
That's correct. It's great support. Yeah, Rav Sheshis called Talsin Yom Mahadalei Talmude. So Rav Sheshis year every 30 days he would go over his Talmud. So he would review his learning every 30 days. Vitali v'kai b'ibra d'dasha. And after doing so, he would have like a mini-seum. I guess that's what you would call it. That's not. I'm adding a little poetic license over here. Not exactly. But v'amar, chadai nafshai. And he says, my soul is rejoicing. L'chal karai, I'm reading for you. He's talking to his neshama. I'm reading for you. L'chal tanai, I'm learning for you. So he's rejoicing, he's happy, meaning he understands that all the Torah that he's learning is enhancing and enabling his neshama. It's giving chiyus to his neshama. So basically, he's rejoicing together with his neshama. So Iniv Amar Rav Elazar Amalei Torah L'Nizkai Mishamayim V'aretz. Now the Gemara says, now it's true, there is a personal benefit to learning. Your neshama does get chiyus, but the Gemara says, but learning is much more than that. Meaning the cosmic ramifications of learning. Ilu Elmaleh, had the Torah not been given, and has the Torah not been learned, we wouldn't have Shemayim V'aretz. It is the underpinnings. It's the platform for the entire world. So it seems, this is how the Gemara seems to be going. It seems a little small. Okay, I'm a little nervous to say it that way, but it seems a little small on the part of Rav Sheshes to just simply like thank his neshama or rejoice with his neshama, when the truth be told is that learning Torah accomplishes much more than that on a much larger scale. So the Gemara's answer is, I'm sorry, Shenemarim lo baritzi yamam v'layla chuko shamayim v'aretz lo samti. So the Gemara now wonders, so why is it now that all Rav Sheshes seems to be doing is just having a personal simcha? So mikara ki avidin ish adayta nafshei kavid. So the Gemara says, yeah, that's true. There is cosmic effects of learning, but when you first engage in learning, you're doing so to help yourself, meaning to help your neshama and to provide chiyus for your neshama. You're right. Ultimately, one's going to realize that there is cosmic effects in learning, but nevertheless, for the time being, there is a personal effect, and that's what Rav Sheshes is enjoying.
I mean, learning Torah is one of those things where it says you get the benefits in this world and next world. So maybe sell it and like happy for his soul that next world.
Right, correct. In other words, right, you can separate him from his neshama. Hard to do, but yes, that could be. The interesting, by the way, I'll just point it out, it's just an observation on my part, right? Meaning the Gemara right now is sharing with us the joy that Rav Yosef and Rav Sheshes had over learning. They both were blind. Right, Rav Sheshes was blind, that we know from the Gemara Pesachim. And Rav Yosef, right after he got ill, I'm pretty sure that he was blind as well. So in other words, sensitive people, right? And I say that in a positive way. Okay. I don't know Sheikh Abed. Amar Rav Ashi. Okay. Now, back to business. Okay. Great Gemaras, great discussions. When you should eat, when you should not eat. Option of fasting on Yom Tov according to Rabbi Eliezer, right? That's not the accepted halacha. The accepted halacha is that you have to eat on Yom Tov. I don't want to say like a burden, but with all these 3-day Yom Tovs coming up, you know, it's hard to get excited for that 6th meal. Okay, we're supposed to, I know, but it's definitely hard. The right. Shal Shudas, you're right. Okay, but now back to business. Okay, we had a Mishnah, and the Mishnah brought in a dialogue between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. And now, as we know, each one is taking their respective positions. Rabbi Eliezer is saying, look, you could do Machshir. And Rabbi Yoshua says, no, you can't. And not only can you not, but look at Yantiv. Yantiv, you're allowed to do Malacha. And you can't do all the you can't do all the Durabanans. So, and what's Rabbi Eliezer's counter-argument? How can you compare? Shechting a carbon Pesach is a mitzvah. So therefore, you could do it and all of its preparatory activities. Eating on Yom Tov is not a mitzvah. That's Rabbi Eliezer's counter-argument. Amar Rav Ashi, we are now on the bottom of Samaches Amid Beis, and Rav Ashi says, Ulamadik Amar Rabbi Eliezer Nami Yom Tov Rishos Isle Pircha. The truth of the matter is that we could still counter Rabbi Eliezer's argument, even Lishita so. Even according to his opinion, there's still a counter. How so? Uma Yom Tov Shehiter Bamalach Shavashos Lo Hiter Shvashima. On Yom Tov, so Hiter Bamalach. There's a heter. There's an allowance on Yom Tov, two shech, two cook, two make a fire. So there are heterim on Yom Tov. And meanwhile, although heterim were given, dispensations were given, but not for the derabbanans, not for the surrounding derabbanans. Shabbos, shelo hiter bo ela malacha shel mitzvah, on Shabbos, that which was allowed is a much smaller area of halacha. The only thing you can do on Shabbos is malacha, but only for the purpose of mitzvah. Meaning, let me just go back one step. On Yom Tov, those malachas which are mutter are totally mutter. Meaning, shechting. You can shecht on Yom Tov. Cooking. Making a fire. Meaning, these malachas were given carte blanche. And meanwhile, any of the surrounding derabbanans that you can't do. On Shabbos, Erev Pesach, The only thing you could do, you can't just simply shecht. You can only shecht the Karban Pesach. So the window of what you're allowed to do on Pesach, and I'm sorry, on Erev Pesach Shabbos, is a much smaller window. So if that which we're allowed to do on Erev Pesach is much smaller, so for sure we can't do all the surrounding derabbanans. So once again now, we can even attack Rabbi Eliezer based on his shita. Now the Gemara will tell you, Rabbi Eliezer is going to defend himself. Rabbi Eliezer, we're now on the top of Samech Tesam at Aleph. Rabbi Eliezer, Shvasta Mitzvah Adiflay. Rabbi Eliezer says, I'm still not buying your argument. Because I still see a very major difference. On Yantiv, it's just permission. On Erev Pesach Shabbos, it's a mitzvah. So once there's a positive commandment to do something, so then yes, you're allowed to do the surrounding derabbanans that help facilitate that mitzvah d'oraisa.
I said the whole time.
Yeah, basically. Amar Rebbe Eliezer. Okay, Tanya. Okay, so now we are going to go now over more dialogue. In other words, what the Gemara does, a lot of this is going to be, you know, arguments back and forth. But it does give us a great window into the thought process of all these respective Tanaim. Tanya Wellington, Bryce, Amar Rebbe Eliezer, Ma. Mali im dachu machshir mitzvah shel achar shchita es shabbos disavle mitzvah lo yitchu machshir mitzvah shel lifnei shchita es shabbos. So now we have a new argument that would help Rabbi Eliezer. I mean, this argument is given to us by Rabbi Eliezer, but the new argument basically goes like this. Rabbi Eliezer says, look, let's look at before shchita, after shchita. Okay, in other words, shchita obviously is going to be the main activity which we all agree we're going to do on Erev Pesach. Okay, even when it falls on Shabbos. Now let's look at before, let's look at after. First, let's look at after. After I shecht the carbon, what do I do? A lot of things. We learned in the Mishnah. There's a whole list of things that we do after we shecht. But one of the things that we do is michui krevav. We squeeze out the intestines. Now, is that, in other words, do I need to do that for the avoda? Okay. One could very easily argue, you don't need to do that. Wait till after Shabbos is over. And meanwhile, according to everybody, you're allowed to do that. So Rabbi Eliezer's argument is, if I'm allowing things to be done after the Shechita, so don't you think we should be allowing things to be done before the Shechita as well? Okay, new argument by Rabbi Eliezer. Amar Rabbi Akiva Demali im dach machshir mitzvah shel achar shchita sa Shabbos sharei dachta shchita sa es Shabbos. Tamar yitzchu machshir mitzvah shel lifnei shchita sa Shabbos shel dachta shchita es ha Shabbos. So one counter argument of Rabbi Akiva is, how can you compare? Because once shchita was allowed, so then the dam is broke. The floodgates have opened. Meaning shchita really becomes the matir. Meaning, so good, now we're allowed to do, once we've done Shechita, so therefore we could do all subsequent malachas. But before Shechita, we haven't done anything yet. And now you're going to tell me, oh, don't worry, we'll violate Shabbos by doing this and doing this, but we haven't even shechted yet. So in other words, shechting is like that trigger that allows me to do everything else. But I can't do anything before. So that's one counter argument to Rabbi Akiva. And additionally, Rabbi Akiva says, let's imagine, I do all the prep work. I carry the animal, I bring it from outside of Tchum, I cut off a ward, I do all the prep work that you're arguing we are allowed to do. And then I shech the animal, turns out I messed up. I didn't do good shechita. So now it turns out, l'mafreya, retroactively, all the prep work was not only in vain, but I was violating Shabbos with all that prep work because it turns out now that it didn't result in a good shechita.
Why don't we use the applied concept of chazaka that majority of shechitas are fine, you go with that chazaka.
Okay, the Gemara is not going to say what you're saying, but essentially the Gemara is going to not buy into the second. This second argument is a difficult argument. So I hachi mishchat nami lo nishchat. Shemi Yamatzei Zevach Pasol. The Gemara is saying what you suggested, and that is, well, if you're really worried about the shechita not going well, so don't shecht. Because it turns out you're going to shecht, the shechita is not good, and it turns out now that you did a malacha on Shabbos, you didn't get the benefit of the mitzvah, because the mitzvah is doing a successful shechita, and you're going to lose. So, So this second argument, the Gemara says, doesn't really pass the mustard. V'nimsa mechal so shabbos l'mafreya. Elaha amar le, I'm sorry. So I hachi mishchanam lo nishcha shem yamas ezevach posel v'nimsa mechal so shabbos l'mafreya. Elaha amar le bereisho parchei v'adar amar le hach demali im dachu. So the Gemara, what the Gemara now does just simply is takes the same dialogue between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Akiva, but just flips the two arguments of Rabbi Akiva. So that what Rabbi Akiva first comes at Rabbi Eliezer with is, well, I wouldn't shecht, because who knows what's going to happen with the shechita. Rabbi Eliezer immediately dismisses that argument. Well, that's ridiculous, so then don't shecht. In other words, of course we're going to shecht. And then we get on to the second argument to Rabbi Akiva. You can't compare activities before the shechita versus activities after the shechita, because the shechita is the matir. It's the trigger. It allows us to do all subsequent malachas. Okay. Heishiv Rabbi Akiva Amar Azah Tochiach. Okay. Now, let's go back to the Mishnah. Let's remind ourselves. What happened in the Mishnah? Further debate between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Akiva now goes into the offensive and he says to Rabbi Eliezer, look, sprinkling with the water of the Paraduma, the May Paraduma, can you do that on Shabbos?
No.
Right. So the answer is no, you can't. And even though all you're doing is violating Nisr Derabanan by sprinkling, right? We talked back in the Mishnah, it's Tikkun Gavra, the guy was Tamei, now he's Tahor. You can't sprinkle but for a reason that's a Din Derabanan. And even though if you sprinkled, you'd be facilitating, you'd be allowing him to bring the Karban Pesach, and yet you, Rabbi Eliezer, agree with me that you're not allowed to do that. So what Rabbi Akiva now is arguing is, so you know that you're not allowed to do that, maybe, look back at the Mishnah.
Can you bring it that day? He's got to wait till nighttime.
Well, what will happen is he'll have somebody else bring it for him, and that night he'll eat it. So, So Rabbi Eliezer says, What do you mean? What are you arguing with me? I think you can sprinkle. Amar lo Rabbi Akiva. Now, I'm just back at the Mishnah. I'm just going over the dialogue. Amar lo Rabbi Akiva. O chalof. How about this? Ma im azashi mishum shvus eino dochus haShabbos shchita shimushum malacha eino din shelo titzchus haShabbos. Maybe the conclusion is we shouldn't shecht. Meaning, if I can't sprinkle, which is only an issur derabanan, I can't shecht, which is an issur daraisa. Now, obviously, that's an argument that even when Rabbi Akiva is saying it, even as the words are coming out of his mouth, he realizes that the conclusion is a false conclusion. It's erroneous. Meaning, we know that you're going to end up shechting the Karban Pesach, which is exactly what Rabbi Eliezer says. Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Akiva akarta mashikata b'Torah. You uprooted that which is written in the Torah, b'moadom, b'mechol b'mishabbos. Okay. So now, the Gemara is going to comment on this part of the dialogue. Tanya, Amar lo Rabbi Eliezer, Akiva b'shchita hishavtani, b'shchita tehei misaso. Rabbi Eliezer makes a powerful statement to Rabbi Akiva. You're mocking me. Right? The way Rashi understands this exchange over here, Rabbi Eliezer is saying to Rabbi Akiva, you're mocking me. Right? Take a look at Rashi, right alongside where we are in the Gemara, a little bit above. Devarschok v'gichoch shamart. You're literally just mocking me. You're ridiculing me. When you're coming at me saying, well, if I can't do sprinkling, I can't do shechting. Because you know, you and I both know, that's a ridiculous conclusion. So you're arguing, but you don't even really mean your argument. So all you're doing is just mocking me. And Rabbi Eliezer says, you're mocking me on the topic of shechita. Your end should come in shechita. Now, the simple pshat, I know, it's rough. The simple pshat of the Gemara is that basically Rabbi Eliezer is cursing Rabbi Akiva. And we know how Rabbi Akiva's fate was met. We're going to be hearing it again on Yom Kippur. So, this is one of those, like, very, it's a powerful Gemara. It's a hard Gemara to hear. But it's a powerful Gemara where basically we get a little bit of background behind, you know, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer. There's that possibility, which the Gemara intimates over here, that Rabbi Akiva did not treat Rabbi Eliezer with the proper respect. And even in arguing in Torah, that's part of learning. Learning involves argument. But still, even in the argument, there has to be a level of degree of respect, and possibly, again, this is, you know, I don't want to say too much in the Gemara. I never like to say too much in the Gemara, but possibly over here you get one of those background Gemaras where you see that Rabbi Akiva didn't give enough of the proper respect. It's funny because we're going to see in just a moment where just the opposite. Rabbi Akiva did show respect to Rabbi Eliezer, but at least at this stage, Rabbi Eliezer didn't like what he was hearing. So Amalo Rabbi Al Tachbirina B'Shasa Din. So Rabbi Akiva says back to Rabbi Eliezer, "Don't deny. Don't deny me while we're arguing. Because when I'm arguing about sprinkling the paraduma, you know where I got that from? I got that from you. You're the one who taught me," Rabbi Kiva says to Rabbi Eliezer, "that you're not allowed to sprinkle somebody with the paraduma on Shabbos, even though that will allow him to bring and eat the Karban Pesach that evening. You're the one who taught me that halacha. So all I'm doing is just arguing, using a point that you yourself taught me." So now the Gemara is really scratching its head. So wait a second. So Rabbi, if Rabbi Eliezer agrees to this point, so how can Rabbi Eliezer maintain an argument against Rabbi Akiva? So Amar Ula, so that's a very tough question. The Gemara is going to propose two answers. Amar Ula, Rabbi Eliezer ki agmer azar d'chuma agmeri d'chuma gufa lo dachi Shabbos. So one answer of the Gemara is yes, Rabbi Eliezer prohibits sprinkling the paraduma, but do you know why? So that a person, so that a kohen can eat truma. For example, let's say a kohen at Shabbos, it's the seventh day, the kohen's finishing up his tumas meis, all he needs now is a sprinkling of the paraduma, so that tonight, motzei Shabbos, he can sit down and he can eat truma. There, Rabbi Eliezer says, don't do it. That you're not allowed to do. So to eat truma, that you're not allowed to do. And why not? So, as Rashi points out, Tosfos makes the same point as well, because you can eat shuma another day.
Okay. It doesn't have to be that day.
It doesn't have to be that day. So in other words, to get sprinkled on Shabbos with the paraduma, to eat shuma that night, eino dachuf. It's not, there's no need to do it right now. However, when it comes to the mitzvah of achilas karban Pesach, so there Rabbi Eliezer says, that sprinkling you're allowed to do. What Rabbi Akiva thought was that unilaterally you cannot sprinkle with the paraduma on Shabbos. Rabbi Kiva nami ki osfe azad de truma osfe she mitzvah vim mishum shvus vehu savar azad de pesach chamosiv lei. And the Gemara explains now, well, there was a miscommunication. Meaning what Rabbi Akiva thought, what when Rabbi Akiva was arguing, he was arguing about the hazah of truma. What Rabbi Eliezer was hearing was that Rabbi Akiva was arguing about hazah unilaterally. Okay, so So that is one way of understanding how Rabbi Eliezer does prohibit sprinkling of the paraduma. Rabbi Akiva was arguing that very point, which he actually learned from Rabbi Eliezer. And so then how can there be a continued debate? So one approach is that Rabbi Eliezer only prohibited sprinkling for eating truma. Rabbi Akiva was arguing hazah. What Rabbi Eliezer was hearing was that Rabbi Akiva was arguing hazah across the board. Okay, that explains the miscommunication between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer. Mace of Rabbi says, "I really am not. I'm not buying into this approach." Heishiv Rabbi Akiva of Amar Azaz Tame Mace Tochich Shachal Shvi Shalol Liyos B'Shabbos Overev HaPesach Shei Mitzvah V'Hi Mishum Shvus V'Enodochus Shabbos. So because we have another Braisa, and the Braisa is very clear that it's talking about sprinkling of the paraduma so that he can eat Karban Pesach. So in the Braisa, it's hard to imagine that there was miscommunication where the Braisa says specifically that we're sprinkling so that we can eat the Karban Pesach. So Elavada has the Pesach Agmare. So now the Gemara is going to give us a second approach. Why is it that when Rabbi Eliezer, who is the source of the halacha that you're not allowed to sprinkle the paraduma, so why is it that when Rabbi Akiva comes and argues using that point, why is Rabbi Eliezer not budging? So the Gemara gives a second approach, a very simple approach. Rabbi Eliezer, Gamrei it akar lei. The second approach of the Gemara is he forgot. Meaning you're right, Rabbi Eliezer at one point actually was teaching that you're not allowed to sprinkle the paraduma, not even to eat the Karban Pesach. And then when Rabbi Akiva was arguing this very point back to Rabbi Eliezer, well, if I can't sprinkle the paraduma, so then why am I allowed to do any of the other activities that you're saying you're allowed to do? So the simple explanation of the Gemara, Rabbi Eliezer forgot. He forgot that it could be that could be another approach. I don't know why the Gemara doesn't argue. Yeah. Could be that the Rabbi Akiva latkure gamre. So the and what Rabbi Akiva is trying to do is gently remind his Rabbi. So the Gemara says v'nei malei be'ajah. So the Gemara says okay. So if Rabbi Akiva is trying to remind his Rabbi what his Rabbi Rabbi Elazar actually taught him, so why not just say it? So the Gemara says savar lav aruch ara. So the Gemara says it's not derech eretz. It's not proper respect. In other words, even though your Rebbe's wrong, and even though you know your Rebbe's wrong, and in this particular case, Rabbi Akiva not only knows his Rebbe was wrong, but his Rebbe at one point knew the correct halacha, taught the correct halacha, and then subsequently forgot. So now Rabbi Akiva felt, although I want to gently remind him, but I'm not going to say straight out, Rebbe, you're wrong, even though he knows that his Rebbe was wrong. Lav derech eretz, it's not proper conduct. So again, so it's interesting how originally Rabbi Eliezer took offense. He was slighted by the suggestion of Rabbi Akiva. Well, if I can't sprinkle, I'm not even allowed to shecht. And that offended Rabbi Eliezer. And you got a very visceral reaction from Rabbi Eliezer, a klala. And meanwhile, over here at the end of the story, you see deference on the part of Rabbi Akiva towards Rabbi Eliezer. So it's interesting. It's, you know, not a clear-cut exchange. And
losing his temper.
Yeah. Yeah, not a clear-cut exchange, but okay. That's where we're standing right now. So the Gemara now is going to ask a really simple question. Okay, so where are we right now in the Gemara? You can't sprinkle the Paraduma on the seventh day, even though the seventh day is Erev Pesach, even though it will allow you to eat Karban Pesach tonight. If that Erev Pesach is Shabbos, you can't do it. And so now we're left with one really simple question. Well, why not?
Why couldn't you say that it's similar to the part? No, you can do it another month.
Okay, so hold that thought, because that's going to be part of the answer. But let me just ask the question really simply: why not? And the Gemara continues: Mechti tilta ba'amahu titchei Shabbos mishum Pesach. And what are you doing when you're sprinkling? Tilta ba'alma. In other words, tilta sometimes in the context of the Gemara means mukza. Over here, I'm not even sure if the Gemara even means mukza, meaning you're just sprinkling water on somebody. There's no violation of Shabbos in doing so. And the benefit of doing so would be that he'd be allowed to eat Karban Pesach tonight. Now, yes, he's going from being tahor to being, from being tummy to being tahor. And yes, he could call that tikkun mana, tikkun gavra. But when all said and done, this is Rabbi Eliezer. Isuri d'oraisa don't bother him.
Why do you use the argument about the Mechusar Purim, who were allowed to bring their korbanot even later than korban tamid, just because of the fact that
okay, right.
Able them to,
and okay, so part of the same question. In other words, simply put, why not? Why not sprinkle? So I'm a rabbi. So the Gemara's first attempted answer is, well, you're right. Sprinkling in of itself is not nisa daraisa, but you may end up carrying it for amos and rosh hasharabim, which is a nisa daraisa. To which the Gemara responds, and let's say it is. Let's call it an Isra Daraisa. Rabbi Eliezer, Ne Avrei Dahamer, Rabbi Elazar Machshir, Mitzvah Dochen Esa Shabbos. So, according to Rabbi Eliezer, isn't that okay? That's fine. So, Amri Hani Milecha Degavra Gufe, Chaziv Rami Chuyuve Alei. Avahacha Degavra Gufe, Lo Chaziv, Lo Rami Chuyuve Alei. So, now the Gemara gets into a very fundamental discussion, a very profound answer on behalf of Rabbi Eliezer. You know why it's not okay? Because Gavre lo chaze, he's not fit. Meaning, when Rabbi Eliezer says, do what you need to do to bring the Karban Pesach, and that is, in addition to shechting, which everyone says you're allowed to do, obviously, serve Pesach, but carry the animal, walk it from outside of Tchum, cut off the wart, meaning you do what you need to do. But now the Gemara is putting on a very big qualifier. But that is that only if the person himself is worthy to bring the Karban Pesach. But if the person himself is not fit to bring the Karban Pesach, so then there is no discussion. Then you can't violate Shabbos on any level. For this person, it's what's called, the Gemara refers to as, right, de gavre gufe lo chaze. The person himself is not fit. And once the person is not fit, in this particular scenario, it's because he's tamei. And even though Right? Think about it. Even though there's a way to ameliorate the situation, meaning all he needs is sprinkling today, but right now, Ba'asher Husham, as he's standing right there, he's not fit. So even Rabbi Eliezer will say, for that person, there's nothing he could do. Amar Rav L'Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So now the Gemara says, okay, so let's think about this now. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, Kan bari mecham lochem la havrasol la mola b'shabbes da chazilei kan chola ein mecham lochem la havrasol la mola da lo chazilei. So now we're going to take the same principle of Rabbi Eliezer Machshirin, and now let's apply it to Mila. Right? Remember this discussion here in Pesachim 6 Perik is the same discussion as Shabbos Perik Yates, where Rabbi Eliezer allows you to do Machshire Mila. So now, the eight-day-old, that's a healthy baby. So there, cook water, bathe the baby, get him ready for the Mila. But the baby that's not so healthy, and probably is not going to, the Mila is not going to be today, so we don't have license to cook the water and make him healthier. Okay, so in other words, the difference between a healthy baby versus an unhealthy baby. So Amar Rava, so Rava says, I don't want to hear that distinction. No. Every eight-day baby is in a precarious situation when getting the meal on the eighth day. So, echa katan bari ve'echa katan chola ein mechama mechama lahavraso ulamolo v'shabbos ha'alochaze. So therefore, even according to Rabbi Eliezer, you can't cook up water before the meala. After the meala, so then we have what to talk about. But before the meala, just to strengthen the baby, right now the baby is gavre lochaze, baby's not fit right now. So therefore, we don't have the ability to cook the water on Shabbos to get the baby ready. Even according to Rabbi Eliezer, the pre-bris bath, that water has to be heated up before Shabbos, not on Shabbos. Okay, this idea is an idea we're going to explore more tomorrow, this idea of Gavre Lechaze. So tomorrow we will continue on this discussion.